Mr. Tiffin, Reel 6, you were telling me about an incident at Petriano. You were leaning against the wall with
Alan. Well, we were inside the house, leaning against the wall of the house. I take my company commander, Frank Duffy, on my left. Further to his left was the door which led into a bedroom, in which there was a bed. We were tired, and had a patch on which we just rested against. I just remember this because it was in Cambridge Chapter, remarked that there was a bed there. Why don't you go and rest on that? Speaking to Frank Duffy and myself. Well, both Frank Duffy and myself said, oh, everybody, we're all right where we are. 3 minutes later, the room, the bed, and everything else disappeared. The clouds were direct hit by the ship. And we were no more than a few yards from it. Now, Frank Duffy, I think it was on my left, the room was over there, simply got up, obviously, dazed, shocked, and muttered something, and walked out the door. I said, I have to go back. And he obviously taken more of a blast, and I'd taken only however, what struck me so forcibly is that, in fact, we'd taken this fellow and stupidly laid on his bed. We would have
in the next room.
In the next room. So they did shell Petriano very heavily, knocking down buildings. There were a number of casualties. We all got down into the cellar. Recollections at the time, one of the artillery spotters, he had a jeep, and obviously a building had been knocked down on top of this jeep, on half of it. But that's another recollection I have, was this chap chattering away into his wireless set, giving shot through his jeep, half buried under rubble. There was quite a few casualties. Up on the road, I remember somebody coming along saying there's several men lying on the road, somebody had to go and pick them up. And the road was being shelled. I felt, well, let's sort of do something about it. Anyhow, one of the chaps to my team, a fellow called Tuck, who you might refer later, who was a little bugger, he was a very mad disciplinarian, but quite an intrepid fellow in many ways. He said, all right, I'll go and pick him up. And I'll get a jeep. So I thought, well, I might not better go with him. So we got in this jeep, which he drove very badly, and I subsequently learned that he couldn't really drive. Drove it along this road, through the village, I think, to the village road, which had been quite heavily shown, rather hair-raising experience. Picked these fellows up who'd been badly hit by a shell over the map. And from somewhere. Anyhow, this shelling went on for quite a bit. So the company commander had gone, and there was three simpletons and sergeant major. We got orders to move on from Petriano. And there seemed to be some ambiguity about it. The company sergeant major, who I didn't know very well, seemed to be reluctant to move because company commander wasn't there. Then we had to persuade him to move. He was a Welshman, I don't know his name. Anyhow, we moved out of Petriano, and somebody came up, and it was a second in command, can't remember his name, came up to.
Of the battalion?
Of the battalion. The second in command, not the second in command, the second. Said the commander of the company. Trying to remember his name. Well, no Durham family, he's not a big colonel. Wasn't a very effective man, I didn't think. Anyhow, we moved out of Petriano hanging in on a hillside. And again, we were very, very heavily shelled out for considerable time. Felt very exposed. I thought we were too exposed, too close together. But that's where the company commander put it. And that was very, very uncomfortable indeed. We lost a number of men. I've got all these little cameos.
That's all right. It fits in. So what's the next thing you remember? You know, the next.
The difficulty is getting a sequence of these events. So clear enough in your mind. This particular event I remember because we had an old group of company commander team with Colonel Wall. And I always remember this. Say, right, when we move into that town, we just move up. And I remember saying to my company commander, who incidentally was a chap had gone back, and Alan, not Alan, hey,
Frank Duffy had come back.
Frank Duffy had gone back, and Ronnie Sherwood had taken up. Well, it looks to me, say, oh, the soldiers have cleared the town, the town's clear. Now, I can distinctly see shells bursting on this town. And somebody said, well, yes, that would be, the town's being shot by Jerry. And I said, well, I can't see that because they're landing this side of the slope. I mean, unless, anyhow, the two things I remember there is the firing stopping. And quite eerie. And up the road came the Red Cross, people bearing wounded, with a great big carrying a big Red Cross. Which, and the firing did stop. It was quite a weird experience to see people walking slowly on, holding up this banner, and indeed the firing stopped. And they wound up the road and carrying several wounded on stretchers.
Were these, were they German or Italian civilians or?
No, these were army, as far as I can see, army medics bringing in army wounded.
British?
British, yes. And they, the firing stopped, all the firing, so obviously, both sides were respecting this rather eerie. It was daylight, a lovely sunny day, but there was something slightly depressing about it, obviously. It always depresses me about it. But I remember that.
What's your next cameo? That you're not quite sure what that village was.
And eventually, we did go and enter this village. Now, could have been one day, I don't know. But this is the other cameo I had before. Either before or after was the road being heavily mortared and people caught on the road. I remember that. However, we got...
Was mortar fire more intimidating than artillery fire, or was there much difference in effect?
Well, it was always quicker. I mean, with this particular, why I remember this mortar fire was the accuracy of it. We were back here, and somebody else was moving up the road in front of us, and the mortars went right down the length of the road, you know, bump, 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 bump. You could tell the mortars by the. No, I wouldn't like to express an opinion on that. I suppose they're both equally intimidating if you're on the wrong end of it. Well, that is another thing I remember. Somebody heading down the road with one of these huge radio sets that they used to carry in those days. Anyhow, eventually we did get into this tunnel. There's no great trouble as far as I can remember. Now, another thing I can remember is getting, whether it was after this or before, I can't tell you, as I say, these are just cameos, is finding ourselves in a minefield. Goodness knows how we got there. We'd obviously been sent somewhere. I mean, there was people firing at us on position. There were snipers. And I suppose we were going round. And suddenly, we were surrounded by the Achon Minor. All around us, except for the way we'd come in. They haven't suffered any casualties. Now, we had to get out, so we had to go back the way that we came in. But that's not to say that we laid a white line or anything. Now, if there were heavier tank mines, they may not have exploded. But still, these places were full of fuel mines. So it was simply a case of retracing our steps through this minefield. And that is one of the most, if you like, terrifying or numbing experiences that I can remember.
Could you look out to see, could you see a shoe mine? You say it fired a bullet.
Well, it fired like pellets or shrapnel or something. Anyhow, it fired up like this. Yes, I suppose you could. There were something like a mouse trap sort of looking thing. I'm very hazy now, but yeah. So I had to walk back about a couple of hundred yards. Finally, we walked into the thing without any trouble. But of course, once you knew you were in a minefield, that was a different matter. So we walked back and said, fine.
Following each other then?
Yeah. And Muggins went first. Which I thought, well,
that was part of your job, but you saw that as part of your job.
That was my job. Everybody expected me to, apart from anything else. So, as we say, we proceeded cautiously back. Fortunately, without any casualties on that occasion. But that is something I remember very vividly.
Now, just one thing. You mentioned earlier, perhaps I should have picked it up then, O Group. What was an O Group at this stage? I mean, who would be invited and what happened at an O Group?
Oh, O Group, this was the colonel with his company commanders.
That's the... The only who else?
Well, a company commander would have an O group, and that would be the company commander in his position.
So it was a trickle down system.
Yes, it was a trickle down system. Yeah. But we were standing around with the ear what the colonel was saying. I don't think he was very sure, but I mean, he thought that the thing was occupied, or we'd occupied it, and I'm pretty sure we hadn't at that stage.
How were you getting on with Sherlaw, your new company commander?
Very well, good, competent chap.
So, what's your next after the minefield?
Well, whether it was after or before, the same things might be out of sequence. I don't know. Perhaps we were near Mondain or I don't know, or some village before it, because we went into this village. At night, or it was dark or dusk, and we cleared this village. We went in, and there was some fighting around the houses.
Were you involved in that?
Yes.
What do you remember of it?
People firing from the houses, sending a section round, going around, chucking a grenade through a window.
Had you had any street fighting training?
Yes, we had, yes.
And that's what you...
What we followed out, yeah.
Was it realistic? I mean, did it work, that sort of...
Well, nothing worked quite as... not everybody was there when you looked around, although there was always somebody there. Yes, it did. I suppose it did work. I mean, not as smoothly as it did in training. It was all a bit... confusing.
Was this what you meant when you say there's, you know, sometimes you looked around and there wasn't, they weren't all there? You mean your 12 faithfuls would be there?
Well, it wasn't as simplified as that. But yes, I mean, there was always something he could rely on. Absolutely, you know, there was always. I mean, this fellow, Tuck, he would always say, I'll go and do that, you know. Right, I really was, but never mind, he was good enough. Oh, yes, by and large, their training stood them in good stead. What I mean is, people didn't rush about with the same alacrity when the real stuff was flying as during the training, but it was useful. And the other platoon commander, or was he a platoon commander in another company, he was killed that night later on. And I remember we had this, ourselves and another platoon commander. I presume these houses, looking back, were perhaps only held by 10 or 12 people, most of whom Scarborough. But later on, and then we lay about in the ditch, waiting to move on again, and we're told that this chap I knew very well, his name I can't remember, he'd been killed during this house fighting later on in the night. So we got up, we moved on in the early morning.
It seems that Mondana was a bit taken and then not taken, according to the book.
Thing I recall really was leaving, I think it must have been Mondeno, in a very, or it might have been the night after I've talked about fighting amongst these houses. Leaving in the early morning, very tired, and there'd obviously been some heavy fighting, heavy shelling. Walking on a road which was strewn with this particular morning. Strewn with bodies, and several bodies, badly mutilated, chap cut in half, and all this sort of thing, which is not, you know, a good thing in the morning. It doesn't cheer you up at all. I think this must have been before Monday, because we moved on then, through some ruins, I remember, sniping, quite a bit of sniping. I remember our sergeant. Lady, who was a bit of a specialist in this sort of thing, I can't remember his name, collecting a couple of dogs and going off to deal with them. This was a family sort of hobby of his. Let's see, that was a pleasant thing, that's right. Passing through, I think we must have passed through the place perhaps where this chap was killed, and there was several, I mean, there'd obviously been quite heavy fighting there, because there were several dead Germans still lying about, and some of ours on the roadside again. And people were going on taking their tabs. All this is a bit depressing, particularly if you have not much to eat, you haven't had any sleep for about 4, 5, 6 months. You're feeling.
Hadn't you been able to get any sleep at all? Or?
Oh, yes. But sort of a bit in the ditch here and a bit in the house there, 2 or 3 hours. You were weary, you know, and always slightly apprehensive in your stomach. I mean, this is, you can help it. I mean, it's all the time as if you're distressed. That's right. So we did get into one day. I remember we got into the church at Montbiel. We rested there for a bit and managed to get a the Russians were brought up to us. Several prisoners have been taken around there. I remember seeing several German prisoners. And it was about 8 or 9 o'clock. But we're pushing on again. And we had to go backwards and forwards. I mean, one time I remember, might have been the night before, it was strange thing, walking through trees and finding that. We were supposed to be the front platoon of the front company, finding regimental headquarters, and the padre and the doctor in front of me. But you know, that's just an aside. I don't know where that was. That's just another recollection. Come back to Mondeno. We was ordered to go up and there was a White House to go up there and reconnoitre it, if possible, occupy it. And we picked our way through vineyards. I was leading the platoon. And about 10, 20, 30 yards in front of me, I saw a movement. Just like that. And so we were walking along. I was instinctively ill. As it turned out, probably the best thing to do, you might have been stupid. I just rushed for it. I had a Tommy gun, which was a very effective weapon in this sort of thing. And opened fire with this Tommy gun. To my surprise, after some shoutings and screamings, I suppose one or two people had been hit. Getting in amongst this, there was, I suppose it was, must have been a platoon of Germans, about 15, 16, came out with their hands up.
Had anybody charged forward with you?
Oh, yeah, I think two or three of them, when I say charge forward, I don't want to make it sound dramatic, but we do. I mean, you saw it, and instinctively you rushed forward because you were so close. Why they hadn't fired at us, probably they hadn't seen us, because we were coming through the vineyards, which were fairly, as I seem to remember, full of leaves and this sort of thing. Perhaps we just hadn't their line of fire. But I'm quite sure if we hadn't fired immediately and then dashed forward, they would have probably been able to do anything. Anyhow, they got such a shock, I presume, when they found people charging around spraying them with bullets, that they put their hands up and came out. And there must have been, as I say, 15 or 16. And the funny thing is, it sounds like something out of Boys in the Prison, but they did literally say, my impression was that people shouted, "Don't shoot Tommy, don't shoot Tommy, don't shoot Tommy." And that's what they actually said. And out they came. And some of them they were giving you things. And I can distinctly remember this, I don't know whether it was a warrant officer or a sergeant, I wasn't sure, coming up to me, saying, "Don't shoot," because they're still obviously apprehensive that we weren't going to ask any questions. Keep on firing. And he was pulling his wallet out of them, showing me. Now, that's a different thing, but you might think, would a fellow do that? But he did. And he put his wallet out, wife wallet. Don't shoot, you know. And I can even understand, go back. And he had a lovely Luger. So he must have been a warrant officer. So I took his Luger and then stuffed it in my belt. And it was a good souvenir taken personally. And we sent them back and occupied the position they had. And we could clearly see this White House. And also, very interestingly, we had a clear view of the road gap, in which literally there were five or six Germans tearing back up this road. And we had about 30 guns. And I suppose there were a couple hundred men firing at them. And we didn't hit them. I suppose in all the best books you would have done. But it was quite a clear tower. It couldn't have been anyone 200 yards ago. And these chaps were just running desperately up the road. Obviously, we surprised them. And I thought at the time, right, we've got, you know, we're surprised. Now's the time, before we've got time to do anything about it, let's push up a setback for the next platoon to move forward. Well, the next platoon never turned up.
Did you find out why?
No, because it was shortly after. I don't know why. Clearly, we, looking back on it, we must have taken one of the two positions. And obviously there must have been other positions further over to the left. I mean, it was obviously time for caution. I mean, I wasn't going to say that I'd got a charge across to this house. But I thought, well, if we get another platoon with a bit of fire cover, we might get up to that. Anyhow, we consolidated ourselves and took up the positions to wait for this other opportunity to come on. And obviously, it didn't come up immediately. The people running up the road had disappeared. And we began to come under some fire from the left, from our left, I remember. The bank sloped down like that, and my platoon was along the bank in one section there, and we were firing the old ship. And then somebody came up and said, you've got to pull back. So I said, okay. And I remember going up to the forward section to bring them back, but moving down to sort of get myself ahead of the platoon and bring them back. Now, I thought I was undercover. I was fairly careful, I thought, but he must have had a line of fire. They must have come round us a bit. The next thing I know, that I was hit. When I say hit, I felt as if a sledgehammer hit my leg. Shot down the bank, down amongst the vineyard. And I didn't lose consciousness. What I do remember is finding my leg across my body. No. And I thought, it was like that. The leg was
bent up and across.
Yeah.
In a completely unnatural position from the surface.
Yeah, I've subsequently talked to the doctor saying, well, of course, it must have been. The bone was completely shattered. So the muscles contract and the leg comes across.
That's the left thigh.
So, what I said is some kind of occasion. So, what did you do? So, first thing I did was reel my toes. Because I thought the leg was off. Or B, it was gone. However, I could wiggle my toe.
Even in the left leg?
Oh, in the left leg, yeah. That's the one I was wiggling the toe. Yeah. Because, I mean, it was incongruous, but I mean, I had enough medical knowledge to say, well, if you can't wiggle your toes, it's a goner, but everything was working. Incredible, as I found out, because later, I mean, the bone was completely and absolutely shattered.
Did it hurt at that stage?
Well, the initial impact was just as if somebody had picked up a sledgehammer. That's the only thing I remember. And just hit it with excruciating force. And then, I suppose the answer to your question, time dims it, but I suppose nature must pick up. I don't know. Yes, it must occur, but I can't say I was writhing in agony.